Welcome to tape 3 of the PDH online course, G210, National CAD Standards 3-1-07. At this point, we're going to start discussing, sheet grouping and numbering. The goal is to be able to honestly say full compliance after the category head drawing set organization, which is really sheet grouping and numbering. The requirements here are again somewhat variable since clients often mandate drawing numbers to fit their filing system. Beyond that, the standard says that a set made up of sheets having numbers with a rational assignment. The form is as follows. A discipline letter from the 20 permitted. Now this is the 20 disciplines we've seen previously and we will repeat them again. Subdiscipline letters. We haven't looked at the subdisciplines for other main disciplines except electrical. Again, we'll look at electrical subdisciplines. There's a sheet type number that can only be of types 0 through 9. And there will be some complaints from your instructor as we continue about restricting the sheet type numbers between 0 and 9. The sheet sequence number, which again can only be 0 to 99. And this is a very, very painful problem. Finally, a two-digit suffix for adds, revisions, references, etc. The discipline and subdiscipline letters are the same as used for layer names. Missing is a category for security and one for instrumentation and control, as we discovered with layer names. Sheet type numbers are as follows. 0 for general or cover sheet, symbols, abbreviations, and notes. 1 for plans, and there will be a problem with plans we'll discuss. 2 for elevations. 3 for sections, 4 for large scale views, 5 for details, 6 for schedules and diagrams, 7 is user defined, 8 is user defined, and 9 is 3D views. Now, I have seen numbering schemes somewhat like this, but not identical to this. It's pretty easy to follow if you have a previous project as a set to model after. You can see where they put in their one-line diagrams. All the one-line diagrams are on a certain sequence. All of their panel schedules are on a certain sequence. All of their first floor plans have numbers that look like first floor plans. All their second floor plans look like second floor plans. The details go in a separate section. This causes me anguish because the purpose of a detail is to explain to the contractor how to do something that isn't obvious from the plan. That's the only reason you invest the effort and the paper space in the detail. To me, it just makes so much sense to put the detail on the sheet where the question arises. Because I know from field work that the sets get ripped apart immediately. The details go one way and the plans go another way. So the fellow who has the question doesn't have the reference that tells him how to address the problem. I much prefer to put details on the sheet where they're referenced. And in fact, in the National CAD standard, this is permitted as a composite drawing type. And this brings up another question, which I'd like to pose for you, because to me it's only a problem. I know what the solution is, but I've never seen it implemented. The problem is, how do you find a specific detail you're looking for? If the detail is on a set of details, yeah, you look at the detail sheet and look for the one you're looking for. But if the detail is on the plan sheet where it arises, and there are other similar plans that have the same problem, does that mean you repeat the detail? Probably not. It's a real bad idea to repeat information at different places within a drawing set. Reason for that is it gets revised one place and not the other. Then you have incompatible commands to the contractor. I mean, how can he follow the orders when the orders disagree? So how do you find a detail that's hidden within the plans? Now, the solution to this, obviously, is to identify the detail when you're doing the index of the drawings. People don't do that. There is some compulsion that I don't fully understand that on the index sheet you must limit the information to just a little bit less than is really needed. First floor plan, that's all. Well, in any event, We will discuss this problem with details and use of details. And there's a much more severe problem with plans, which we will discuss also. Hey, it says here, the problem with plans is that 99 sheets within a discipline is tight. The other most commonly sheet numbered standard has all 100 series drawings for the first floor, 200 series of the second floor. Then A101 is the architectural view of the first floor, which is used as a background for mechanical, electrical, piping, security, and such. Each discipline has its own overall first floor view, like M101, E101, P101, ES101. The sheets are comparable, and the sheet numbers indicate this, and tell the drafter where to look for the proper background. And for interdisciplinary checks, the M101 should be very similar to the E101, and let's see what they did on mechanical, compare with what we did on electrical, and see if we've run into any problems that way. Well, if you limit the plans to 0 through 99, there aren't many spaces there for a large building. Standard requires an index, usually on G-0, and enough description for individual sheet content to identify sheets with combined content, such as schedule detail or vendor illustration, that is on a plan for easy construction communication. Let me say that again. The standard says there's supposed to be enough information on the drawing index so that you could find something that's been nestled in on a plan that arguably doesn't belong on that plan. Two other requirements are included as part of the standard: common backgrounds and common look to all schedules. Now, these are so important. This is what the client looks at. This is what the contractor looks at. This is what the plans reviewer looks at. Common backgrounds and common look to all schedules. The worst disaster I've ever encountered was when the architect moved a door and we didn't get the replacement backgrounds, and we all showed the old door location whereas they were building it to the new door location. That just is real egg in your face. I mean, don't do that. Now, the common look to all schedules, this is a lot harder to implement. Usually the schedules come from something that was used on a previous project. Well, the previous project didn't have to comply with these standards, so you bring it in and drop it there. The line weights aren't the same. The text font isn't the same. A lot of problem with schedules. And you will see this on most issue sets of construction drawings. That's the schedules from one discipline look like they have nothing whatsoever to do with the schedules from another discipline. Done by a different firm is the word they use. Remember, the UCS is a standard, so compliance means doing it their way. They want a little bit of backgrounds and schedules in the set category. Now, what's going on here? We are looking at drawing set organization, and we're talking about common look of schedules, but there's a separate entire discussion of schedules. Common backgrounds is easy to describe, but hard to evaluate on a pass-fail basis. Common background should have column numbers and letters in the same size displayed on every plan. Common background should be uniformly screened so the construction required from the contractor is emphasized. All screening for disciplines should be 50% or 40% or 30% with perhaps a 0.14 inch line weight. Now, I've been having a lot of trouble on a current set I'm working with. I just can't get them to plot right. Well, I finally got them to plot right, but in order to do that, I had to move the backgrounds down to a 30% screening, and I had to adjust the line weight for 0.002. Now, this is bizarre beyond belief. 0.002 doesn't exist. We're going to get into a discussion later that the minimum that a laser plotter is capable of reproducing is something like the 0.14 we indicated here. Well, how can you tell at 0.002? Not only that, when I was messing around with these trying to get it to plot right, it looked bad at 0.005 and looked good at 0.002. So the plotter is doing something in the range beyond the print head width. Most bizarre. But again, the goal is that they look right. So you do what you got to do to make them look right. And they're supposed to be consistent look right between the mechanical and the electrical and the architectural and all the other disciplines. Furniture should be consistently turned off or turned on in mechanical, electrical, piping, fire protection, security, and such. The viewport should be consistently visible or not visible. Now, what does this mean? Again, this is not the training course for CAD, but we do our drawing in a space called model space. We do our plotting in a space called paper space. What's the difference between paper space and model space? Well, paper space has the border, has the title block, has all that stuff. Model space doesn't have that stuff. Model space usually has the entire space of the drawing, all the way from the property line to the utility room, to the perimeter lights, to the next property line. Then you take a picture through the frame, which is in paper space, down to the model space of what you want to do. So if you want to give them a detail of the electric room, you have a zoomed in viewport of the electrical room. But the model space contains the entire project. Well, what are we talking about here? When we zoom in, there's a window we zoom in through. There's actually a border, a line that is the viewport, that is what you zoom in through to see the part of the model that you want to reproduce on your drawing. You can either turn on the viewport so that the frame is visible, or you can turn off the viewport. I've worked projects both ways. They are both totally satisfactory, but it's got to be consistent between the disciplines. Project I'm working on now, you'll love this. The viewports are visible when you're drafting, but they're not visible when it's plotted. There is a column on the plot sheet that says non-printable, and you click that for the viewport. That way you can always see where your viewport is. You can adjust it larger, smaller, change your zoom ratio, things like that. But it doesn't plot. It's just a feathered edge to the window into the model space. But whatever you do has to be consistent as the client picks up the set and leafs from page to page. Common look to all schedules means a common text style and height between disciplines and a single border line width and separator line width. Usually a sample in the internal drafting standard communicates this well to designers. Content layout on a typical sheet. Now we're getting into the next category on the statement of compliance. The goal is to be able to say honestly full compliance after the category head sheet organization. There are 12 measurable aspects in the standard. They are standard paper size, border or trim marks. Now, let me step back to that. Standard paper size means consistent within the set. Goodness knows we don't have a standard paper size. There are 20 different sizes we can choose among. Anything you like is fine, but after you've chosen, everything has to be the same. Border or trim marks uniform throughout the set. Uniform sheet margins. Uniform sheet division. Required title block information. Plot data beyond the left border. Sheet number, again, in the upper left. And again, that's my addition, not part of the original standard. A scale bar, which is required by the standard, required as an optional item. Enlarged electrical rooms with content not duplicated on floor plans. We'll talk about that in a moment. Separate lighting and power sheets, except when using a quarter inch equals a foot scale. Call out of runs when conductor exceeds 2, and I argue against this. Finally, reference photos identified by detail or section callout and as a legend on the photo. Standard paper size is a good question, but the NCS offers no answer. Standard lists 16 paper sizes, I rounded that to 20, including metric and imperial. We really ought to be able to agree on a standard large, medium, and small, maybe the small being 11 by 17 for reproduction on copy machines. Metric is totally satisfactory for large and medium. Most people plot from 36-inch rolls and trim anyway, so any size you choose less than 36 in its minor dimension is quite satisfactory. Border trim marks is a non-issue. If the standard calls out a specific line weight, it would mean something, but this is not the case. The standard accepts very arty firm standards with borders but no trim marks. There is a suggested border line weight, but not mandated. Uniform sheet margins. I mentioned this previously that I trimmed to a half inch. Standard says 3/4 inch. I always trimmed a half inch. It says here right here in the write-up. It should be consistent within the set. The mechanical that I work with trims to a half inch, so we are all issuing non-compliant drawings. But they're consistent non-compliant drawings. Uniform sheet division is something you have seen but probably never thought about. The standard calls for the division of the entire drawing space into 30 blocks, 6 wide by 5 high. That's in landscape orientation. You may draw the boundaries on a non-plotting layer or leave them public. Library details should be sized to drop into a module with no scaling. Schedules must be created to fit one or two or more modules. Sheet notes should be in the same top right module for all disciplines. Many architects have been doing this for years, and it looks really good on the sheet, but it has not been common for mechanical, electrical, or piping. Required title block information. Ray may require revision of firm standards. The NCS wants contact information for both the project and the design professional. They mention websites and email, but don't emphasize them. Layout of the title block is loose and matches the components required on conventional title blocks. A revision information, design, subcontractor, seals, etc. Title block must be vertical and on the right. Plot data beyond the left border is the plot stamp presently provided by some programs, some CAD programs, and some plotters. Note, however, that the standard wants a lot more information. Time date, full file plot, full file path, plotter used, plotter control file name. They optionally demand plotter setup, plotter commands used, overlay commands, lists of external references, layers plotted, production hours invested. Be warned, the way standards develop is that optional items in the current release become mandatory later. Now, let's step back to the concept here and make sure we've picked up on this. The plot stamp is optional. It's not required. If you do it, they recommend a lot of things in it. I have discussed things that I see as tremendous value. Having the full path to the file being plotted is very, very helpful. Beyond that, the standard here calls for the time date stamp. Now, there's some value to that, but there's some confusion to that also. Yeah, inside the organization, it's nice to know if it was plotted yesterday or today, especially since we know there were revisions done today. But the client doesn't want to see this. This is confusing to the client and the contractor. Why were these plotted on different days? If they're included in the set, that means we decided they're acceptable and they convey accurate information. Giving the date that they were plotted is asking for trouble, just asking for questions we don't have to ask. Things like the plotter control block, it's a wonderful concept, except it's unlikely to work. The reason it's unlikely to work is, in my employment, each drafter uses a different plotter control block. Well, I know we're supposed to use the same one, but we don't, and it's kind of a dirty little secret inside the organization. We tweak up our plotter control block to get decent look on plots. So my plot is not the same as the CAD supervisor's block, and it's not the same as the mechanical guy's block. If I plot something on his machine, it comes out different than if I plot it on my machine. So it would be nice to know what the control block is, except he changes it and leaves the name the same. I change it and leave the name the same. The CAD supervisor never changed it, so it's the original, but it has the same name as these two other different ones. So simply reproducing the name of the control block on the drawing doesn't tell you which control block was used until there is some evolution in either our procedures in use of control blocks or in the way people define control blocks. sheet number in the upper left-hand corner is not in the standard. I added it because I've been using scanned drawings that cut off the title block. Many government bodies require the sheet number in the upper left-hand corner, so you know immediately if you have an electrical or mechanical sheet, even when the title block is gone. And again, the form of the sheet number tells you which set it's from. I work on a lot of renovations, and there's a 1970 renovation, there's a 1980 renovation, there's a 1990 renovation. Each of the design firms that did the renovation uses a different numbering sequence, and even the form of their numbers are different. So I know which set it is just from seeing how they print their sheet number. Scale bar is a graphic representation of the scale used on the plan or detail. It's superior to a text scale because it stays right even when the drawing is reduced, and it's very usable on the screen for electronic files. You are compliant with a text scale, but the scale bar is strongly recommended by your instructor. Enlarged electric rooms with content not duplicated on floor plans. Now, this is my wording of their requirement. What they're saying is that electric rooms are inherently too busy to reproduce on 1/8 of an inch equals a foot. So on your general plan for the building, do not detail the electric rooms. Do it on a separate sheet that is 1/4 inch to the foot. Now, there's a big problem with this. The problem is the general plan shows where the conduits punch into the electric room. Obviously, you want the equipment that's connected to them on the other side of the wall where they punch into the room. If they're two separate sheets, this is a nasty coordination job to keep them lining up. If they're on the same sheet, they automatically line up. I mean, you can see it punches in and it hits it, or it doesn't hit it. If it doesn't hit it, something needs fixing. If it's on separate sheets, you will not pick out the fact that they don't align properly. Now, what are they addressing? Well, you can't read it at 1/8 inch equals a foot. That's absolutely true. Even with a lot of leaders and callouts, it's difficult to impossible to use the drawing properly. If you blow it up, what happens? That stuff that was all crunched together and too tight gets blown up, but it's still of a scale that's all crunched together and too tight. The proper way to handle this, and I hesitate to say it because it's an awful lot of work for the drafter, is to have two separate layers. One layer that's at 1/8 of an inch to the foot, one layer that's at 1/4 of an inch to the foot. Now, what? This is bizarre talk. Everything in model space is at 1:1. Why are we talking scale? Well, that's kind of true and it's kind of not true. We usually do our drawings in model space so it reproduces properly at 1/8 inch equals a foot. So, yeah, it's 1:1. If you count the clicks, if you use the distance tool within the drawing package, it tells you in inches and feet. But in fact, what you're looking at is something that's laid out to reproduce properly at 1/8 inch equals a foot. And this is why it comes out looking really, really bad if you just blow it up by 2x to call it 1/4 inch equals a foot. So what you do is you have your general model space drawing with everything drawn there. Then you come up with a new layer separate from the model space drawing that is 1/8 inch equals a foot for the electric room, only for the electric room. And you do the stuff and everything matches the main plan because everything looks like 1/8 of an inch to the foot. But you can turn that off and turn on the other new layer, 1/4 inch equals 1 foot. And then you can do some text in there that will blow up properly and look right on a 2x drawing. Now, this is the same thing we were talking about a while back when we were talking about bid package 100 and bid package 200. So for one use, we turn on one set of layers, and for another use, we turn on another set of layers. Some people have done this for years. It is not commonly done in the electrical design. I think we're going to have to start doing it in the electrical design. The reason is it makes a good drawing set. Yes, today's objective is to comply with NCS 3.1, but it makes a better drawing to have a readable 1/4 inch equals a foot that has proper coordination, even though it takes more work fooling around with the layers. The standard is clear. Do an enlarged plan. Do not duplicate the panels, transformers, etc. on the base plan. There are similar requirements for dense architectural and piping areas. Well, what I'm suggesting, I think, complies with that. They're saying do a separate quarter inch equals the foot. Yeah, we're doing it in the same model space, but we're doing it with the quarter inch equals the foot standard. We're turning it on and off depending on how we're using it. And again, the CAD standard is sure to evolve. As problems are identified, they will be corrected in future editions. Separate lighting and power, except when using 1/4 inch equals 1 foot. Again, I've done some very, very small projects, and there's a tremendous temptation to put the lighting on the same sheet as the power. And they're saying, go ahead and do it, but make sure it's 1/4 inch equals 1 foot, that the thing is big enough that the contractor can tell what is a circuit for a receptacle and what is a circuit for lighting. And I think we all agree it's better form to duplicate the background and do 1 for lighting and 1 for power. When the guy's running the lighting circuits, he runs the lighting circuits. When the guy's running the power circuits, he runs the power circuits. And he doesn't have to worry about one when he's working on the other. There's nothing in the standard about power for HVAC terminal units, data, or security. I have issued separate sheets for each with good results. I have combined them on the same power sheets with good results. It kind of depends on how dense the information is. Some designs have a few HVAC terminal units and they don't interfere with anything. Other designs have an awful lot of HVAC terminal units. If you've got a lot of small offices, each has a terminal unit, each has data, each has power, each has security, I mean, you just get too much for a 1/8 inch equals a foot drawing. Again, blow it up to 1/4 inch equals a foot, things get a lot better. Issue separate sheets for security, for data, for HVAC power. What are we talking about in the standard here? Standard doesn't address this at all. So your goal is to issue some good sheets, do what you have to do to make it work. The standard says, call out power runs when the conductor count exceeds 2. Now, this kind of makes sense, but doesn't really make sense. It makes sense if you live in a single phase world. 2 conductors make a single phase outlet. 2 conductors make a single phase lighting circuit. But everybody else lives in a 3-phase world. If we're doing a utility wastewater plant, if we're doing a school, if we're doing an office, everything there is 3-phase. You're running receptacles. You pick off the first phase for the first outlet. You pick off the second phase for the second outlet. You pick out the third phase for the third outlet. Somebody trips a breaker on one. The other two are still live in the room. So it's a 3-phase circuit. Now, according to the standard, you have to call that out as 3 number 12s, number 12 neutral, number 12 ground. Well, I would rather have that be the standard circuit, since 90% of all your wiring in the building is going to be 3 number 12s, number 12 neutral, number 12 ground. That should be the one that you don't have to call out specially. When you get into a single phase circumstance, then call it up, since that's the special. But again, the standard says when it exceeds 2. It would seem to me you could comply with the standard if you use the 3-phase notation and a note to that extent. Maybe not. We haven't had anybody enforcing this standard yet, so we don't know how it's going to come out. Reference photos must be identified by detail and section callout and as a legend on the photo. This is non-trivial. The designer is often so close to the project that things appear obvious, which are not to someone who just picks up the set. Especially true for demolition drawings, where the subject matter will be gone when the pictures are looked at later. Callouts and legends have always been good practice. Now again, what are we doing? I did a nice set. I'm really proud of this, and when you do good sets, I want you to be proud of them too. We were doing a demolition drawing. We start with a plan of the building, and we put pictures around the edge for the contractor of what he's supposed to rip out. And each of these pictures is cross-hatched on what's supposed to be removed. And there's a leader from the picture down to the place on the plan with a little donut on the plan showing where the picture represents the area. And this just communicated so well. It communicated to other people on the project team, communicated to the contractor. We had no problems with this part of the demolition. It was just a very, very successful thing. So you must have a legend on the photograph that says, filter number 7 facing north. And you've got to have a leader down to the plan showing where the picture was taken from. And this communicates well. The National CAD standard doesn't say much about inserting photographs in drawings. This is a very, very powerful tool. It takes a little bit of effort to get it to work right, but after you've got the trick, it's just plop, 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 and you've got this 24 by 36 inch sheet done with 20 pictures around the edge, and it communicates so beautifully. And in the current version of AutoCAD, I'm not familiar with MicroStation, but in the current version of AutoCAD, they let you adjust the raster density of each picture. So you can tweak up the pictures so they look good. I understand there's a way to crop pictures within AutoCAD. I don't do that. I usually insert my pictures in Microsoft Word, which has some pretty good cropping and adjustment tools, and then copy it from Word into the drawing. Now, be aware there are two very, very different ways of inserting pictures into drawings. One is an Olay object. That's what I just did. I put it in Microsoft Word. I say Control C to put it on the clipboard. I say Control V to drop it on the drawing, and it's done. It works so well. It is so sweet, and it increases the size of the drawing massively. So a demolition sheet may become 20 megabytes. Now, if you're dealing with CDs and you're dealing with FTP sites, these aren't problems. If you're dealing with email, and email is by far the worst problem, you can't run large files through most email. You get a good print out of the thing, you get a good working drawing out of the thing, but you can't transmit it electrically. The other way of doing this is you reference it within the drawing. And I think that is an AutoCAD command. What we just did was using the Microsoft clipboard that's part of the computer. It's not really part of AutoCAD. It's just supported by AutoCAD. AutoCAD has their own commands for putting pictures into drawings. And I think it's called insert raster. Well, what you have to have is the raster drawing, either a TIF or a JPG file, either in the same directory or referenced by full path name to the drawing you're working on. And then you say insert drawing, and it leaves it in the directory, but it calls it in when it prints it. Now, if I'm making sense, you'll see that the AutoCAD drawing becomes small, but it has to have the reference drawing in the same directory or in the same path indicator. So if you email it to somebody else without the JPG or TIFF, they don't have it. It just says TIFF missing. If you use the Olay, if you are successful in transmitting, it's all there. So I recommend you look into this if you haven't done it previously. There are rules for doing it. The rules are not very extensive in the National CAD standard, but it helps your drawing set. It's something good. Next, we're going to talk about forms of schedules and lists, but I'm going to take a break, and I suggest you do the same.